listener production.
I'll never forget the first really serious multiple fatality collision I went to. It was in 1988. There was three ladies killed in a collision. The things that happened that night, I still remember them as if they were yesterday.
We tend to think of accidents as only affecting those directly involved, but in this ep, we're going to look at the very real and wider-ranging impacts for friends, colleagues, as you heard there, loved ones as well, and how deep those scars run, and in some cases, why they will never get over the aftermath. Now, in the last series, we heard from a special guest in Glenn Weir, who works in a senior role for the Victorian Police Force. We'll hear from him again shortly, but he was one of our experts. Today, he is joining us in the other role in our podcast series, sharing stories throughout his policing career. Hi, everybody. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome to another episode of Keep Your Wheels On, the podcast where you will hear from real people talking about the mistakes that either resulted in them crashing their car or narrowly avoiding a situation that could have been much, much worse. And along the way, we'll be joined by experts to chat about how you can do your best to avoid ending up in a similar situation. Lisa, before we get to our guest, you're involved heavily in the driver training process. How important is it that we reinforce to those that are learning, setting out on the road, how wide-ranging the effects of an accident can be?
Well, they estimate that a fatality will affect at least 100 people. So whether or not that's direct family, friends, community, work colleagues, and obviously the emergency services that actually come to those events to help them on the scene.
Shortly to the police side of the ledger, if you like, but we're also going to talk about this from a hospital and recovery, I guess you could say, perspective as well. We're delighted to have with us a nursing consultant, Megan. Welcome to the podcast. Does this subject, I would imagine, resonate with you on an almost, sadly, daily basis?
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me. It absolutely does. I think there's lots of people that work in the hospital environment, especially in emergency, and it doesn't just affect the clinicians, but also I think sometimes the cleaners that are there to clean up the scene afterwards and the wards people that take these people, sadly, sometimes to the morgue. I think we see a lot of things here and it is just sad.
There was some research out a few years back and they estimated that over 70% of ER hospital admissions are due to road trauma.
Yeah. I mean, so the hospital that I currently work in, it's not a major trauma hospital. We are regional trauma. So if we have really big accidents, multi-fatality ones, they often get taken to a sister hospital just not far up the road. But we do still see big ones. And it is one of our major traumas that come through.
So Megan's already made us even think about widening the perspective here, right? There's even other people I hadn't even considered that are impacted from a single accident. That's the theme today, how a single accident can hurt so many. Now, we met Glenn Weir, the Assistant Commissioner for the Road Policing Command at Victoria Police last season as a part of the Keep Your Wheels On podcast. Today, we're going to get to know Glenn a little better because it can be easy to think of the police generally as people who just attend these crashes simply as that, police or emergency services. But these are real people who have to often attend horrific incidents that are, as Glenn's already indicated, indelibly imprinted in their mind for life. Let's go to Glenn now.
My name's Glenn Weir. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Road Policing with Victoria Police. It's my 43rd year of policing, and I've been in this role since 2021. My first car was a 1974 bright yellow Galant sedan. I don't make them anymore, I don't think, but I grew up in country Victoria and came to Melbourne to join the police cadets, which was a scheme we had back then when I was 16 and a half and did year 12 within the policing structure, which was really interesting. And but of course I didn't have a license, so I had to catch the train back to country Victoria each weekend to play footy and cricket and all those sorts of things. And then I'll never forget, I turned 18 and got my first car and drove a long distance down to Melbourne in this bright yellow beatbox of a thing that, yeah, it was that loud, like the transmission and all that. You had to turn the radio up really loud so it didn't drive you mad. We've come a long way since then. Growing up, as I said, in the country, and my grandfather and my uncles had farms, so you did a bit of farm driving and just learning the basics and the mechanics of it all. But at 18 and a half, like I was still on P plates when I graduated from the police academy. But of course, there was an exemption, you didn't have to wear P plates on the police car because it would have looked a bit odd. Quite a sight to see the div van at Malvern Police Station where I first went, driving up Glenfree Road with the P plates on. It would have been amusing. And so then I learnt to drive effectively. And I often say this, you know, did I learn to drive way back in 1981? Probably not. I didn't learn to drive. I learned to get my licence. In joining policing, I learned how to drive properly. Part of what day-to-day every police person does, it involves road trauma, because it's something that any police member can, it doesn't matter what your role, your rank, or what job you're doing, you could witness something or respond to something. There's a vision in Australia and Victoria to have, by 2050, to have zero fatalities on the roads. And people say, oh, that's ridiculous. How can you possibly aim for that when our population's increasing? And I'll go, well, tell me what number's acceptable then. If it's not zero, what is it? Last year, we had the worst road trauma in Victoria for 15 years. We had 295 people lose their lives on our roads. So you can imagine what the trauma was to families, to emergency workers, and police and everyone, just responding to this tsunami of trauma. A lot of people come into policing with some preconceived ideas, but it is often not until you go to that first big thing, that first big collision, that first big brawl, that first homicide scene that you go to, a really significant emergency that you're dealing with, you don't know how you're going to react. You know, you can train and try and expose people, and we have a really good process in Victoria where throughout our training of all our recruits, people will do a large number of weeks in the academy, then go out into the field and then return to the academy, reflect, learn some more, go out again. You can't run a test on how people are going to react. You know, you never forget being involved in all of them. And in the 3 and a bit years that I've been doing this job, there are a number that stick out to me because they never go away. And I'll never forget the first really serious multiple fatality collision I went to. It was in out of Melbourne. It was in 1988. There was 3 ladies killed in a collision at about 10:30 at night. It was dark, quiet, desolate. Things that happened that night, I still remember them as if they were yesterday.
So powerful. Really interesting, Megan, to hear Glenn switch in those series of comments there. It was lovely to hear him speak so personally about his upbringing. And I mean, the Galant that he drove, the second car I ever owned, was exactly the same. So I can immediately picture the vehicle, right? But the moment he started recounting stuff around his role, his job, and things that he'd seen, he changed. Is that something you have to do? Do you have to put a shield up? Do you have to deal with it a certain way?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, we as humans, I think you're emotionally invested to what's happening around you. And no matter how empathetic you are naturally, you know, built in, I think you have to somewhat have that step back when you have these big traumas or any, like not even road accidents, but just horrible things that come through the emergency department, because you have to be there professionally and they're the ones experiencing it emotionally. You have to just be able to get in, do your job, try and save this person's life and therefore save the lives of those around them so their worlds don't fall apart, you know. And then you do see it once the person leaves the ED, whether they're going to ICU or the morgue, you do see just this lull that's left with us because we're picking up the pieces, but then there's someone else rolling through the door.
So you don't have much time in that sense to...
No,
you've got to pick yourself up and go again, basically.
You do. It all depends on what's coming through the door, obviously. If it's a nice little time and you have the time, you have your debriefs, but you don't always get that chance for a good hot debrief.
What you guys do, what Glenn does, what Megan does, is clearly brave, in my opinion, way more so than what we do in our day-to-day roles. Clearly, it can be such an impactful thing. We've established that at the beginning of the pod here. Has it ever made you go far out? Am I cut out for this?
Me personally, no. I, growing up, didn't know what I wanted to do, and then I thought I wanted to get in psychology after losing a friend quite young and, you know, worked my butt off in high school to get into it, got into it, and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be at all. Like, I thought I can't help anybody with the information I've just been taught for the first half of my degree. And unfortunately, but you know, fortunately at the same time, I lost my uncle to cancer. He was quite young. And how the nursing staff were with him, he was such a funny bloke and they were always so funny with him. I was like, they get to just be themselves in this person's time of crisis. And I thought maybe this is better where I'm fitted. Not at all thinking it's going to be emergency, but once I walked through that as a new grad baby nurse, I was like, this is where I belong. And I don't think you know you're cut for that until it actually happens. And then it just absolutely becomes an identity. And I think Glenn and anybody else in first responders can relate to that. Definitely forms who you are. It puts you a new perspective on life. And when you have some friends that are so dramatic about the smallest things, you're like, oh my God, that's nothing.
It would give you perspective.
It absolutely does. And I think you surround yourself with those people in the end, just you don't want anything else dramatic when work's dramatic enough.
I've never met a nurse that wasn't funny because I think they have to say a lot of really funny stuff.
We have thick skins, my friend.
You see some stuff that no other people want to see, but
we do.
You manage to actually have a sense of humour at the other side.
There's positive things as well, obviously, in our job, but we do just see the worst of the worst, and I think that's what it just puts your perspective into things. But I don't think anything can prepare you for seeing death as frequently, and in context, I suppose, of this podcast, like sometimes when people have made silly decisions and that's impacted their life and the people in other cars, or, you know, it then follows on to emergency services, it follows on to hospital, it follows on to out and beyond. Like, I don't think anything prepares you for if you can handle that or not until you're actually in it.
Before we move back to Glenn here, a couple of things. Glenn speaks about, in that comment a moment ago, his first big incident. You know, it was in the late 1980s. He vividly recalls it to this day. Can you remember your first big one? And does that mean when some of your colleagues are in the same boat that you lose good staff, that they perhaps are not wired like you, that they realise that it is not for them to keep doing that sort of role? What's the impact on staff in that sense like?
I absolutely remember my first incident, and it was before I was even qualified. I was doing my undergraduate year at a big major hospital, and it was sadly a child that was thrown out of a car. But what we were told was that they fell out of a car, and as we know, no one just falls out of a car, especially a toddler. Mm. And I can't hear the name Axel without feeling sick in the guts. You know, like that name is just forever tarnished for me. I think what was like sad. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Sorry, Megan.
Don't be sorry. I think what's sad about things like that was this child that was thrown out, you know. His parents weren't in the chopper with him because they were suspects. And
oh, good God.
The clinical staff become that child's family to hold their hand and get through it all when actually we're trying to be the professional ones there, you know. So obviously that still affects me. And this was maybe 16 years ago. I think that one was at least 16 years ago. It was an amazing resource effort for those involved. You couldn't have had a better team. You couldn't have had better doctors, nurses, care flight, theatres, everybody that was involved. You couldn't have had it better. It was just what's so sad about it was it didn't need to happen. And the fact that this poor Todd was on their own, you know, and that's what's really sad. I think, like, it definitely affects staff. I think it definitely affects people moving on, burnout. All those rates are huge, especially in emergency. I think that's why people like me are rare, where you hear more than a couple of years, you know, let alone going on to 15. There's people that are more fossils than I am and have been around for their 20s, 30s, all those kind of years. But you don't often stay on the clinical floor front line like that. You move on to wanting to do something more quality improvement kind of stuff, to think there's more, you know, that we want to do to stop our staff feeling the way that they feel, or stopping things in the community from happening in the first place. It does absolutely affect staff, but we're not in this job to think about our own feelings, you know, like we're in this job to help others that can't help themselves.
Thank you for sharing.
Do you have specialist PTSD counselling or?
We have a service that the hospital employs that we can obviously call. if we need to. Yeah. I'm actually working on a project at the moment with one of the nurses who's working towards their specialist role, and it's about peer support and actually aligning a couple of peer support people with the new staff. And it's not just about when there's a traumatic accident, it's about you've had a horrible shift, you know, and you don't know how to unpack that you've just seen all these people come at you and nowhere to actually see them and give them the best care you can. So we're working on stuff internally just to try to give our staff more mental capacity back.
If I use a car analogy here, Rod, I'm sure the tank isn't bottomless, but you're amazing to keep giving in the manner that you're giving. Now, obviously, for all of us here on the panel, this has been a little bit of an emotional start to things, and we're very grateful.
Sorry.
No. You do not need to apologise. We're very grateful in your role that you're helping others to understand the impact of this, right? So let's circle back to Glenn. We'll grab a little tissue. Glenn spoke about some of the incidents that have stuck with him. It's nice to hear what Megan said a moment ago, that all of these departments, you know, working with police officers, it seems like everyone really bands together in these moments to try and do their level best to look after the patient, right, the accident victim. So let's go back to Glenn and find out now a bit more about some of these incidents he's dealt with along the way in his career.
So during your career, and the longer you do this, you will go to a large number of significant trauma events, be they criminality, violence or road trauma. And I've certainly been to a large number of significant road trauma events. And I do, you know, remember one particularly, the first multiple fatality collision that I went to in outer Melbourne in 1988. And it was on a really dark road late at night, and there were three families, and the males were driving in one car and the females were driving in another car, and they were all members of a soccer club, and they'd been playing soccer during the day and then socialising afterwards. And so the males were driving along on this dark road and the females were driving along behind them, and for some reason the male driver of the lead car crossed onto the wrong side of the road. It was a one lane each way carriageway, and so the females thought, oh, that's him, so they crossed over as well. A large truck was coming the other way. He's gone back onto the right side of the road, but the females haven't reacted in time and been hit and have all been killed instantly. So, of course, we get there and you're confronted with this terrible scene of carnage of three ladies dead in a car. The husbands of those three ladies just beside themselves. And then slowly as we were there, a large number of the same club who were following behind came along and stopped as well. And it was the sounds of human despair and trauma. And in fact, one guy, one of the husbands, was so completely out of control and was trying to crawl into the car, which is quite dangerous because there was fuel leaking. And we had to actually grab him and physically put him in the back of the police van just to protect him. And, you know, to do that was very confronting because he is a poor man who's lost his wife and two other ladies. And trying to contain that scene in a dark, desolate, cold air, and just the sounds of the SES turning up, the generators for the lights, large fire trucks cutting the car open and being there, just trying to make sense of that carnage. And you try and disconnect from the horror of what you've seen, but you try and disconnect that with the actual human emotion you're seeing and all the other people, and then you've got to get into investigative mode and you've got to make sure that you're preserving the scene. But you've also got to provide support for the families. But that still stays with me, and that's 35 years ago. And some of those sounds and sights, and I drive down that road a bit now, and it's been, you know, it's double lane or triple lane both way, and it's light, and it's all nice. But every time I drive past you, that stays with you forever. You know, there's one that's obviously pretty close to my heart, and that's the four police who were killed in the Eastern Freeway in 2020. Two of those police members worked under my command, and the other two worked in the command, which I'm now in charge of. That was caused by an impaired truck driver who hit the police car that had pulled another driver over by the side of the road. Though two police cars had pulled over a car that was speeding, they were waiting to impound it, and the truck driver was impaired by drugs and killed them. It was the biggest single loss of life in one incident that we've ever suffered in Victoria Police since 1853. To have four serving police killed at once in one incident. That had an unbelievable impact on our organisation, on the Victorian community, on me and my people and the people who managed through that. And, You often see the best of people in the worst of circumstances, and that was certainly true. The performance of some of our people, and it continues to this day, involved with the families of the four deceased and some of the other people who are involved, and the way the community reacted on that night, some of the people who stopped and helped, amazing, and the amount of support. But that's a snapshot of what one incident can cause. And this happens every day. Doesn't happen on that scale. But, you know, we limited the amount of our people, investigators, who had to actually walk right up to the scene and see the trauma that had been caused, and that, you know, to try and limit that. But of course, that's easy when you get control of an incident, you can manage that. But that first half an hour, and I probably got there an hour after it happened, I suppose, on one of the major freeways in Melbourne, to have it completely shut and silent at what would normally be a peak time with hundreds of cars going, it was completely silent. And you could just see the looks on some of the faces of the people, both the police people, the other emergency services, and some of the people who'd stopped. And that was caused by a single act. But that incident in particular, and that was 4.5 years ago, and it's still going on. And that's something that we still manage people through. And we've lost some people in the organisation since, because the trauma was so much for them. And it's something I will never, ever forget. And I know a lot of our country police deal with this every day, because people they might, you know, play footy with, or their kids might go to school together or something like that, they go to incidents involving people they know every day.
In this podcast series, we've done two fantastic seasons now. And along the way, if you think we're banging on about awareness, about safe distances, about making good choices when you're behind the wheel, about not using your phone, about not driving under the influence of something, this is in part why. This is very powerful from Glenn about the wider reaching impacts. Megan, have you been in a scenario where you've seen how it's affected some of the other divisions that you end up working with, whether it's police, whether it's ambulance?
Yeah, I don't know how some of the police can, like, I guess it's similar with, you don't know you're cut out for it until you're there, because it is very intense. Mm. But we don't have to respond pre-hospital, you know, we are when they walk through the door and we get a handover about what's happened, the hours that they're on scene beforehand, obviously, unless it's life critical and they get scooped out and sent to us. But we will often have the police or the ambulance, whoever was involved on scene, hang around for a while, like they want to see what we do.
An outcome, hopefully a positive outcome, yeah.
They do, because you're invested, you know, like even if you feel like you've gotten cold-hearted after all these years, you're not, you know, like you're invested. You just seem to weed out where you distribute your cares for the day, almost, like something big like that, something serious. We want to see the outcome for this. We want to hope for something positive, that all of our efforts weren't futile, you know, like they were, something good's going to come of it. And you do definitely bonds. Form relationships. Yeah, absolutely. Trauma bonds, weirdly. Yeah. But when Glenn spoke before about the police that were killed. So we've had a similar thing where we had a colleague's brother's child seize and didn't stop having a seizure, and essentially they came through to us. So ambulance picked them up, came through to us, and they lost cardiac outputs. We had to give them CPR, put them on, this child was one, it was horrible, and then put them on adrenaline infusions. We had apartment works across the road from us, so there was these big cranes, so no choppers could land at our hospital, but there were police there with another patient, and we said, oh, this is part of our family, you know, when they cleared roads for us to get this kid down to the nearest field for our chopper to land to move them to another hospital. And, you know, everyone that was all involved in that, it's because it's our people, and you just, you know, it's just that trauma bond. And I remember working and giving CPR to this child and knowing this family personally and how horrible that was. But you remember what paramedics were involved. You remember the police that were there that were like, this is not a problem at all. Let us get a car in to get you out safely. Like, it's just, the ripples are crazy.
The whole team, everybody puts in so much.
But it's not even because we know them. It would have happened anyway. It's just that you just have no problems reaching out and saying, like, this probably isn't the chain of command, but you need to talk to your boss to get this going so we can get the best outcome for these patients. Because police, fireys, ambos, emergency staff, we always just want the best outcome.
I mean, you talk about being practical and it might come across cold-hearted, but after 43 years, you can tell Glenn's not cold-hearted.
Not at all. Not at all.
And you couldn't be, really. To do the job, you actually have to have that big heart.
That's when you need to tap out. You know, when you feel that there's something so big and so horrific and you're not feeling anything, that's when you need to not. And you can absolutely tell that Glenn's still absolutely invested.
He remembers things, particularly around the victim's social circle, right? So you must see that too. I mean, you're invested in trying to save, help whoever's involved in the road crash, the road trauma, but invariably friends, family, colleagues, whatever are coming in. And that must be enormously difficult to deal with too when they're understandably so upset about things.
Distraught.
Yeah, distraught.
Yeah. And I think most people as well work where they live. Like it's a convenience thing, right? You've got kids or whatever, you want to be as quick as you can to take them daycare, to get to work, to go back home again. You work somewhere long enough, you grow up somewhere long enough, you know people's people. It no doubt affects you in a different way. And I don't know how many stories you can sort of tap in on this sort of conversation we're having, but it was only very recently that we had a friend of my husband's, one of his best friends that he grew up with, and it was in a car accident and had a cardiac arrest from the car accident and was scooped up and taken to our hospital. So we weren't on shift, but it's still, we know who picked him up. We know what resource room he was in. We, you know, and that stuff sticks with you. So something that wouldn't impact you, you just don't lose him from your life anymore, but you want to know the clinical side of things and you want to know what was done and what could have been done differently.
Glenn recounted that very sad, very frightening crash in recent years on the side of the freeway that has had a huge impact on him, his department and colleagues and so on. He talked about the truck driver, the impairment involved. How do you feel when you learn that perhaps some things that pass your way through the emergency department have been caused by these things, be it alcohol, be it drugs and so on? And what impact does that have on you?
That's extremely frustrating for us in emergency, and it's, you know, drugs and alcohol, especially in our local health district, it's huge. Like we have a lot of impaired people, not always behind the wheel, but chosen to take XYZ and then have a behavioural disturbance and end up being scooped up and brought into us. And it's just why would you do that to yourself? And look where you are. Now you're restrained to a bed and you've got no rights. Like it's frustrating when we're like, there's somebody next to you who's had a heart attack, or someone next to you that's had a stroke, or someone next to you that's dying of something that they never asked for, you know.
But something avoidable is
exactly
what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a
bad decision.
Yeah, it's just the awareness of like life is absolutely precious and every minute is a blessing and you just don't know when it's going to be taken away from you. And so the silly decisions to be behind a wheel after drinking, or just even being a pedestrian, I suppose, is drug affected or alcohol affected, like your decision to do what you're going to do is going to impact so many people. Like everybody is someone. And I think people don't think about that. And I try to teach it to our baby nurses when they come through, that that patient, even if they've made horrible choices and they're here now, that's someone's mom, someone's dad, someone's daughter, someone's son. You have to keep that empathy. It's difficult when that might be the 293rd person that's come through our door today and you're on empty, but it's someone.
Glenn has already shared a couple of incidents that have really stuck with him along the way, having had such a long career in the police force. There's no doubt many more, and I'd like to continue back to Glenn.
On Melbourne Cup weekend 2023, we lost 5 lives at Daylesford. People who were sitting out on a nice afternoon in a beer garden in Daylesford enjoying a meal and enjoying the sights, and they were hit by a car and killed. And it came on at a time where we had so many multiple lives lost fatalities. But I remember getting notified about that and just thinking, not again. Not. This has been a year of 2, 3, 4 and now 5 people killed in one particular incident. And I just remember thinking, and I was at home, I get the phone call, I'm just thinking, no, not again. not again. So then you stop thinking, you go, oh, stop thinking, you've just been selfish. Stop thinking about what impact is this going to have on me. This is going to ripple through, and it has rippled through entire communities in the western suburbs of Melbourne where these people were from. Where it happened was just adjacent to the Daylesford police station. They heard the collision. So two members in there ran out from the police station and were confronted by, you know, this unimaginable scene of trauma, little kids and adults killed and seriously injured. The first responders, CFA, volunteers, the AMBOs the same, and then just dealing through that whole wave of emotion and outpouring of grief from the community. And I know, you know, it's the family want answers and you can't always give them an answer, and that's a frustration as well. There isn't always something that, yep, this is what happened and we will fix this, because you can't fix it. I remember that moment. You sort of got to check yourself and thinking, right, get on with it. This is not about you. This is about those poor people and that community. But it just shows you the harm and the sort of malted. Road trauma is like a giant octopus. It's got so many tentacles, it's touched so many people. And people just need to understand that a moment's decision making, and a lot of the collisions we see, and I hate, you know, the term accident, there's no accidents. The collisions that we see can be caused by such, and people think, oh, I was only doing the bit over, or yeah, I was just a bit late on going through the light or whatever. I was just answering a quick call on my phone. Those simple actions can cause so much trauma and people still don't get it. It's so frustrating. After COVID finished, we ran a lot of operations. We hadn't done any breath testing because of infection control and our capacity to do it. And we caught so many people drink driving. And I go, what's going on here? And so many of them are P-plate drivers, which was really odd. And they said, oh, well, we haven't seen the police doing breath testing for 2 years because you've been doing everything else. So we thought we'd take a chance. And that just goes to the mindset of people, I think. Now, I think I can get away with it, so it's okay. Well, it's not.
Can we go to you here, Megan, just on the notion of what Glenn said too, just around this concept of not getting caught, or I'll just take that call because I don't think it'll matter or mind. I mean, you're seeing the back end of those choices, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely matters as well. We have these rules in place. You know, I've got two kids. One of them is, she's nearly 11, and I've just got to be so aware of the example that I'm setting for her, you know, like to try to not even keep my phone at the front of the car, chuck it in with my handbag in the back, so you don't even have that temptations removed to just quickly check that one thing. And I always say to her, it's your split decision that could make someone's life changed forever, and or I could be so fine but impact on someone else. You know, I think training people better, I think that's the crux of everything. I think people still smoke even though they know that's going to give you lung cancer and cancer is going to metastasize and you're going to die. People know that alcohol, while it's got its fun time, it's bad for you every day, all day, every day, but we still tend to do it. There is just that I'm invincible, I'm entitled, I'm here for a good time, not a long time, but it's horrible that that impacts so many different people.
Prevention is always better than cure. So that's right. You know, where we've got to come at. We've actually got to come at this end so you don't get patients.
Before we get some final thoughts from both yourself and Glenn here, I'm going to ask this, but don't feel compelled to answer it, right? If you're not comfortable, I don't want you to do that, right? Have you ever had to tell family members that this crash means that a victim's outlook is bleak? And how the heck do you hold or have that conversation?
We've absolutely had to do that. As a nurse, it's not my primary role to do that, but yeah, they're absolutely to support the doctors because no one should do that alone. And we are all human beings. We have in the hospital social work as well, depending on the hour of the day, we can call them in as well. But if we can tell this from the beginning, like from an emergency department view, we've done the CTs or we're still on their chest, still pumping at them, giving them CPR, even though it's been 40 minutes and realistically we probably should have called it 20 minutes ago, but we just want to try one more thing. Like, you want to be able to tell them you absolutely did your best. You've absolutely done everything. It's tough, but I think it's real. You know, like, you don't want to give someone false hope when they go to the ICU, think, oh no, they're going to go to ICU and they're going to fix them, when in reality, ICU are probably just going to be waiting to see if they're going to wake up from the interventions that were done at the beginning. So it's a team effort. Absolutely. It's medical and nursing, but we're actually there to support each other. Mm. And if the doctor's going to have that, I actually can't talk anymore. You don't want that to look like we've been too emotional to do what we're doing, so the other person's going
to
step in.
So you have to have a level of strength somehow to calmly deliver this.
Yeah, because it's horrible, and especially if it's something avoidable. You can't say this could have not happened. You know, it's not going to help anybody in that situation.
And also, I think the younger the patient, the more gutting it would be.
It's horrible. It is horrible. Yeah, but that's from anything, trauma or even illness related or something. It's the younger they are. I think across the board it's harder because you've got your whole life ahead of you.
Glenn says it's like an octopus and tentacles or a web, if you like. Right, he absolutely nailed that. How far reaching, yeah, in your opinion, is road trauma based on what you're seeing on a daily basis here?
Yeah, it's massive. This impacts not just the clinicians in the ED. It's if we've had a lot of spilt blood, you know, the cleaners come in, no one debriefs with the cleaners afterwards, you know, they're going to keep going to the next place. And they might go home and talk to their family members about it. Maybe they're not ready for it and they're going to get this second or third hand trauma going, oh, I'm just trying to be there for my person. They've got to somehow try to channel that themselves. I think it's infinite. I couldn't tell you where it stops.
I'm not a believer in telling listeners to listen. I would encourage them to do that. I've always thought it's your choice when it comes to podcasts, right? But for those listening today, I would love it if you went back to listen to Glenn in our first season as well. He joined us there as a part of the panel, whereas today he's sharing stories. And he spoke about a driver called Zach. And this was very emotional for me in particular and for Lise. Zach went to prison after almost killing, I think, 5 people.
Driving impaired.
Now, if you haven't heard that story, here's a little of what happened.
And I don't know if you've ever been really drunk and you kind of lay in your bed and the room kind of spins around you. That's what it was like, but I was behind the wheel of my car. When I looked back at the road, I'd run a red light and I was flying for a brick wall at speed. The last thing I remember is just looking at this wall and thinking, oh, fuck. And then everything went black.
Rusty, you've obviously got a story here. I can see you're really emotional about this.
I just think that I have an 18-year-old who's on the road. What if she was innocently involved in something like that? My youngest is sorry, guys. I just couldn't, you know, I have an 18-year-old who's only been on the road for a year or so. My youngest is just about to start doing this. What if they were innocently hit when he went through that intersection?
I listened to that episode. I felt the same way. Like I said earlier, everyone is someone. And even if you're not at fault, but you're on the other end, like no one deserves to have that taken away from them.
And I think as if for teenagers listening to this, you want to really take away, I think, that you never want your parents having to go through that.
Oh, they don't recover.
You'd never
they
recover.
Don't recover. And we see that. Yeah, we've seen that. Absolutely. And I've seen it only recently with losing a friend from a car accident and then going into cardiac arrest. And we still see that family regularly because they've only got it. Well, he's just turned 2. So we still go to birthday parties and that kind of stuff. And the mother hasn't recovered and she never will. No. And I couldn't imagine what that's like to lose a part of you because your kids are part of you, right? They're always at the forefront of your brain and you have to do so much for them. But it's just, I couldn't imagine all of a sudden they're gone and that's someone that you've brought into the world.
If you don't mind, I want to get actually Glenn's sort of latest take on this as well. We talked about it in the last series. Let's go back to him now.
Listening back to that whole story of Zach when he, you know, being involved, I often wish it's a classic case of I never thought it had happened to me, but it did. And I think that's what all drivers are. Driving a motor vehicle is a privilege. You've got to have a license to do it and it comes with certain responsibilities. And I think people realising, tempering that unrestricted freedom that people get when they get their license and off they go, albeit, you know, there are a few restrictions in the first few years while they're on their P's. But having that responsibility and then owning the responsibility, and people aren't robots, you know, everyone acts differently, but realising that, a bit like I talked about before, about you got to realise it's not about you, it's about everyone else. Being a community on the roads, you're part of a, when you're driving on the road, you're part of a community, and that community is people who are on that road at that time, and making sure that you're a responsible part of the community. You know, if someone's merging from the left from a slip lane, moving over if it's safe and letting them in. Not driving straight up someone's bum at 100 kilometres an hour because, you know, they won't do 102 because you want to. Just have a bit of patience, a bit of maturity, a bit of lack of entitlement, which is one, if I was king of the world for 2 days, that'd be one of the things I'd get rid of, would be entitlement, because it does my head in. You know, there's this debate about fines and revenue raising and all these sorts of things. Just don't make a voluntary contribution. Just do the right thing. Be a leader. You know, if you've got a license, show some leadership with your peer group, with yourself, with the other road users. Just do the right. That's really simplistic to say, but it should be something that is quite simple.
It is a privilege, not a right, and it comes with great, great responsibility. And you must think about that every time you get behind the wheel and you're about to fire that car up. To both of you, to Megan and Lise, some reflections here, a bit like Glenn. How can drivers be encouraged to make better choices, to be better about their behaviour behind the wheel?
We've got a charity called Road Safety Matters, and I'd actually just like to everybody to think about exactly that term every time they get in the car. Because road safety does matter to everybody else that is on the road, to the 100 or more people that would be affected if you as a driver, if something happened to you, or if you caused an accident, for the rest of your life, you're going to be affected by that, negatively impacted, and negatively impact so many others. So yes, driving is, you know, is freedom, independence, employability. Having a license is a lot of great things. But also, it comes with great responsibility.
Megan, what about for you? What sort of things would you like our listeners to take away from this?
Yeah, I think it's just what Lisa said and what Glenn said. It's just being selfless, you know. Everything that you do in life impacts other people. And unfortunately, things behind the wheel of a car has that power to end people's lives. You know, it's not just making a small decision that might change someone's hour, you know, like cutting in front of them at the grocery shop. It's not like that. This is something that could end someone's life, which will destroy their parents and their siblings and their family community. It will destroy their school community. It will destroy their work community. It will destroy their parents' work community, you know, sporting communities. It's just being selfless. It's not about you rushing to get to where you have to go and cutting someone off. It's not about you having your beer so you can get home instead of getting an Uber and saving a couple of bucks.
Answering the phone.
100%. Like, just being selfless, I think, is a good life motto, let alone driving motto.
Yeah, I think that's great.
There's been some tough stuff that you've dealt with along the way in your career. Can we end with maybe a positive today? You get invested in these scenarios when they happen, right? What about someone who's perhaps come through this, that has been able to leave the hospital and go on and lead a good life, and maybe some of the fun that you've been able to have with them along the way?
Difficult one. I think all the major ones don't always have great outcomes, and I can't sugarcoat that one, unfortunately. And the ones that we do keep alive in us into the ED, they do go to intensive care. As emergency clinicians, we don't get privy to see how they're going. We can see it in their clinical documentation, but do we get to be bros and catch up with them before they leave? Like, no, because we're too busy on to the next lot, you know. There's plenty of good news stories, but I don't want to scare people into going and becoming a nurse or working in emergency. There's so many good things, but horrible things are horrible, and that's what you can't change. And I think it's in any profession, in any life, you know, the horrible things are horrible and they do stay with you.
What we can do is be better and make a good contribution to trying to reduce that for you people on a daily basis. The wider ranging group that we've established here in this conversation that it affects, it does not just affect you or perhaps the passenger who is with you or the person you may be involved in an accident with. I think it's fair to say here, Lise, this is just a timely reminder that it is a web. It is those tentacles that Glenn talked about, isn't it?
It'd be a great day if Megan didn't actually have any road trauma victims come in. If you were out of business, it would be brilliant.
Exactly.
It would be good if there was preventable that we didn't have to intervene with. That's the hardest part. If it just didn't have to happen, it sucks that it did.
Thank you for sharing today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and to you and all of your colleagues, we are incredibly grateful for what you do on an hourly, on a daily basis, and thanks for continuing to keep giving in that area.
You're a star.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the next episode of Keep Your Wheels On, driving for work. Maybe your work expects you to drive with a trailer or with a heavy load, which can add all kinds of challenges to being behind the wheel.
I think over the last 6 or 7 years, this one particular school's had 6 deaths.
And we've invited Graham from TAFE New South Wales to join us to talk through what you need to know to be a safer driver whilst you're on the clock.
Yeah, we all know that insurance companies are the first people to jump up and down and look for ways to not pay out claims. You're using your personal vehicle that's insured for personal reasons, for business reasons. That'll be the first one.
I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is Keep Your Wheels On. Keep Your Wheels On is a listener production brought to you in partnership with My Drive School. Hosted by me, Greg Rust, and Lisa Scaife. Audio production by Kelly Fulston. And executive producer is Todd Stevens.
A podcast funded by the Australian Government and supported by Repco Authorised Service.
Listener.